Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. According to a 2019 survey of some 4,005 professional women, nearly half of black women are frequently or always the only person of color in a professional situation. Black, Latin, and especially Asian women said they seek support at work from people of races other than their own, and only white women said they seek allies from within their same race. Well, tonight, we're talking to a black woman who is in a unique position to speak on those issues and so much more, including on black women climbing the career ladder. Benita Stewart is the author of a new book, A Blessing, Women of Color Teaming Up to Lead, Empower, and Thrive. She is also Vice President of Global Partnerships at Google. You want to talk about this issue, about black women climbing the career ladder, whether they're just starting out, whether they're in the middle of their careers, or sitting at the precipice of greatness near the end of their careers. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Hey, Benita, how are you?
I'm fine. Good evening.
Good evening. So let me get right into it and let's talk a little bit just briefly so that people really have an understanding of who you are. Because to be quite honest, you are in a position right now where I would imagine that there are very few people of color, male or female. You work in the tech industry at the very top. So you are in rare air, very rare air when it comes to a career. You started at Howard, then you went to Harvard, the Howard of Ivy League. If I could say that.
But how the double H.
Yes, absolutely. But when it comes to your career climb and the influence within your professional world of black women, how did you get here from there?
Well, I think one of the things in our study, we looked across all, as you mentioned, 4,005 female American female desk workers, and we looked across all races, black, white, Asian, as well as Latinx. But we also looked at the generations, and we'll talk a little bit more about that because I think there are nuances. So we looked at Gen Z as well as millennials, Gen X, and boomers. And there were differences, quite frankly, across the generation. And what we're calling this right now, we've coined the phrase generational diversity. And so when you think about just the climb, and I can make it a personal, I would say that I have taken the road less traveled. And I probably have done that from the beginning. My father, was a pioneer himself. He was in the U.S. Air Force. He was a pilot. He flew the world's first supersonic bomber, which was the B-58, and there were only two black pilots that were qualified to fly that particular plane. So it seems as though I've always been in male-dominated industries, but I have been able to thrive. And I think part of that is from being a pioneer and wanting to be a role model for others. But at the same time, there were always allies or sponsors and mentors, along that journey. As I was taking the road less traveled, spending time in the automotive, I actually, co-founded two companies and then working in the automotive industry and leading brand advertising for Chrysler and then doing all the digital marketing for Chrysler, Dodge, and Jeep. And so you're right. I have been on all the rooms and then for the past 14 years, I have been in the tech industry, but I feel very comfortable here. And I think, in fact, there are more people that we are attracting to technology. And quite frankly, part of it is getting the word out that this is an industry that others should consider.
But I don't want you to miss my question, because You said you were a pioneer. That means, based on, you know, your study, you are very much like the women in this study. You are alone. You were the only brown face or black face, in your industry. And, you know, certainly kudos for being a pioneer. But according to this study, it says, as I read, that, you know, women of color are less likely to look to their own for assistance, membership, guidance. Were there any women of color who helped you, or is that a no? Because you were, as I said, working in rare air as it relates to black women.
Yeah, so let me answer your question. You're right. I was one of those only. And even today, that's what's so astounding about our study, is that when we conducted this in 2019, 47% of black women today, which is almost half, say they are frequently or always the only person of color in a professional situation. So imagine that's in 2020. And so what we're doing through the book is basically saying, no, we should not do that any longer. We should think about teaming up. And we did a little twist on a technology term, which is called SaaS, Software as a Service. But we say it should be Sisters as a Service, because quite frankly, probably should have teamed up, you know, along the way. But this is where, if this is still an instance today, we do think that women of color should team up. We should refer one another. We should give each other feedback. We should create basically our own flywheel of belonging. And then at the same time, we do want to focus on making sure that we're building capability across inclusive leaders so that they are hiring us, but they're not hiring us as tokens and being one and done. They're actually hiring us in multiples. And so that is what we have to try to do today, is to take all the onlys and think about teaming up together, which sometimes in our community is something that we haven't done, quite frankly, where we haven't asked for help.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about black women climbing the career ladder. Where does that help come from? If you have a comment or a question for Benita Stewart, give us a call at 202-319-7810. One of the things that considering this conversation with you, I was thinking about the conversations that I have had recently with, you know, my good, good sister girlfriends, black women that are professional. And I'm talking about conversations that I've had not last year. I'm talking about conversations that I had last week, conversations that I had this week, conversations that I have had over the past several months. All of them really good sisters, professional, educated, climbing a career ladder, private industry, government. And to be quite honest, Benita, one of the things that all of them have complained to me about recently is other sisters in their office. And whether they are supervisors or whether they are colleagues, what some may be... issues that, I don't know. Do I not understand it because I'm a man? I don't know. Help me. Because
I think in many cases it's historical. It's always been, since slavery times. It was the divide and conquer, crabs in a barrel. I mean, we all have the different phrases for it. But what we're saying now is it's 2020. No one should be taking a solo journey. Our survey found that 92% of black women and 90% of Latinx women felt sisterhood would be important to them at work. Mm-hmm. And so we have to develop a mentality in terms of that sisterhood. And it can be done. And oh, by the way, it should be done across the generation. So there should be generational alliances as we think about this. And so if we see someone who is an only, what we should do is make sure that we are supporting each other. And that it's very simple. Team up. What does that mean? You know, I'll give you an instance of that. That's not a work-related situation, but I love ballet. I've been taking ballet. I used to take classes at Howard, even though I wasn't an arts major. I would just, like, sneak over to the fine arts and take classes there. When Misty Copeland was dancing and we knew, you know, that she would potentially be a principal at American Ballet Theater, you know, I decided, I know what it feels like to be an only. I said, let me grab all some other onlys, and why don't we, as Black women, so I took 14 Black women and said, let's plop ourselves down in the orchestra, and we are going to support her, because she's dancing her heart out, and we should be in the audience, and we should be saying brava, you know, to her, and really supporting her, and sometimes we don't do that. And so when you think of team up, it's a simple gesture. It's a very simple gesture.
Yeah, and I was just looking at your information here. You are a member of the American Ballet Theater's Project Plié on the advisory committee. So, brava, there.
You know. Well, you know, there's a commitment,
right,
to actually diversify, then you want to be part of that. Because now I see it doesn't matter where I'm going or, you know, online, all of a sudden, and you have to give credit, you know, to the Dance Studio of Harlem and what they've done. But at the same time, there are so many Black and brown women on toe shoes, you know, that are actually changing. And now they're actually, you know, manufacturing toe shoes and caramel, every, you know, colors for us.
Yeah.
And so, and oh, by the way, I will say, despite all of everything that's happening, we are winning as Black women. I mean, we are the most educated group within the U.S. And we also represent, women of color, represent $1 trillion of consumer spending. I mean, that is the GDP of Australia. And so, and then you think of entrepreneurship. American Express did a study 2007 to 2018. Women, Black women, owned businesses grew 164%. So, and oh, by the way, there wasn't basically 0% of venture financing. So we are making a way out of no way. And so we have this very strong foundation. As Maya Angelou says, we are the miraculous. And when you think about our influence and what we've been able to accomplish, and we are full of ambition.
Well, let
studies
me,
have shown, you know, we're three times more likely to aspire to a position of authority.
Let me go to the phone lines. We have a lot of people who want to talk to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lana calling from Gaithersburg. Quickly, Lana, what's on your mind? Lana, are you there? Lana, go. Call me back, Lana. Let me go to Felicia. Felicia calling from Maryland. What's on your mind? Felicia, there we go. Felicia, go right ahead. What's on your mind? Felicia, can you hear me? Let me go to Mike. Mike calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? I don't know whether or not these folks can hear me. Either way. I want to continue. One of the things that you said, which I found very, you know, interesting, and maybe, you know, there should be the subtitle, you know, the power of positive thinking, you know, as it relates to you, because you have been in a position, like you said, being a pioneer, you know, all of your life, kind of the Nike thing, just do it. Is that the thing that really has propelled you and your relationships, that once you got to a certain level, you were able to pull other people up?
Yes. I mean, I think once you're in a position, but you are able to pull. But I do think, as I mentioned, you know, based upon our research, particularly with the Gen Z as well as the millennials, I mean, they are basically saying, Black women, Gen Z, are saying, I will have control over my career. Mm-hmm. And so they could potentially be a flight risk. And so because they want to have control, and it's not as if they're going to plow through, similar to the boomers and the millennials, you know, said the same thing in terms of having control over their career. I will say there, sometimes you do need a roadmap and from others. It happened to me. My father had passed away. You know, he passed away at my freshman year of at Howard. But many years later, I was basically early in my career, you know, post B school, and I had to clean out, when my grandmother passed away, clean out the home, and I actually found a speech my father wrote. And so it became, quite frankly, my roadmap, my almost strategic roadmap, and he talked about the trail to success, and he talked about the four C's. So whether it was character, you know, building a strong character, concentration, making sure you have focus and you're delivering and you have capability. And then he also talked about culture, you know, just making sure that you are open to culture and new opportunities, as he spoke to that as well. And the last being just be courageous. And I think that was probably the most important one, because sometimes we think we're so stuck in a position, but sometimes we actually need to challenge our risk profile and make a pivot if we need to make a pivot, particularly if you're trying to develop skills. So I think personally, I've always been intentional, and I have taken a positive attitude, but you don't put up with everything. You know, you do make choices based upon what you're trying to accomplish.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we will go back to our phone lines. That includes talking to Lana from Maryland, also Kim calling from Laurel. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Coming up next, John Mons and the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about Black women climbing the career ladder. My guest is Benita Stewart, author of A Blessing, Women of Color Teaming Up to Lead, Empower, and Thrive. She is also Vice President of Global Partnerships at Google. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lana calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Lana. What's on your mind? Lana, can you hear me? We're going to have to figure that out. One of the things that what was the most courageous thing that you have ever done as it relates relates to your career as you began to move up?
I think a few things. One is starting your own business. That's quite courageous to leave. I left IBM to actually do that. I learned a ton. I had to, quite frankly, go back in, since wasn't able to scale that particular proposition. But the proposition was called One Moment in Time. But today it would be called Rent the Runway. We just didn't have the internet at the time to actually think about doing that. But we were actually doing formalwear rentals for women. So that was early on, but that was, you know, taking more of a courageous step in terms of founding a company. I would say the other, going into the automotive industry, a non-automotive person, came in with the perspective of a consumer and was started with, you know, looking at the consumer strategy and then left. You know, because then in 99, it was the dot-com era, you know, so having a love for technology from a business perspective, I actually left the automotive industry to now then start another company. And it was a website, it was Mia Online, that was focused on African-American women. And then Daimler Chrysler called me back and they said, we would like for you to come back and actually lead the Chrysler brand advertising. And that was just something I felt as though would be an important career assignment. And so I convinced my husband, we went back, to Michigan, and he was working on his CFA at the time. And I was leading the Chrysler brand. And then from there, they said, why don't you just lead all of the digital for the Chrysler group? So I did that for Chrysler, Dodge, and Jeep. And then Google came knocking in 2006 for me to set up the automotive practice. And you could say that was a risky move. In 2006, you had a great job, lots of, people reporting to you. And I went over to Google, and there were, essentially two of us, starting the automotive practice. And, it was built, pretty swiftly over time. But I do think you have to take those calculated moves, and you need to, as you're seeking advice, it's seeking advice and listening to yourself. But at the same time, sometimes you have to have some consultancy with others. As you're making these somewhat difficult decisions, but I don't think they're necessarily that risky.
This is why I ask, because it is difficult for people to be risky, particularly now when we are living in risky times. And for women who are listening to you and saying, this lady is doing something that I can't even possibly imagine. So what is your advice to someone who is trying to take those baby steps, whether a Black woman, whether she is in the beginning or, the middle of her career, as it relates to asking for advice, finding a mentor, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would, the one thing, and we talk about this in the book, and we have a whole chapter devoted to allies, because it is so important to make sure you have allies. The chapter's called Dreaming of Allies, and we have very specific tips for them in terms of what we would like to see from them in terms of hiring us in multiples, that we just don't have only sitting out there. We just think the era of tokenism is over. We shouldn't just have one and done. It should be a thought process of really thinking about multiples, and also for the allies, thinking about potential versus perfection, and just knowing that brilliance, particularly Black brilliance, comes in all different colors and all different hairstyles. I mean, you name it, but there's brilliance there, and that's what people should focus on. And then what we tell individuals, in the book, is that you should be open to taking a stretch assignment. So we did a little twist off of the 40 acres and a mule, which we did not get, post-Reconstruction, during the Reconstruction era. But today we can. Like, why not have 40 allies in a stretch assignment? But everyone should try to stretch themselves. You need to find your limits. You need to understand your strengths and what you can and cannot do. And even if you make mistakes along the way, you learn so much from mistakes. I always took on some of the risky projects, because I would just learn so much. I would have more information, more ideas, and not everything panned out. And I was okay with that, because I felt as though what's the worst thing that could happen to me? And maybe that, from suffering grief, but, at a very young age. So I felt as though careers were long, and I should be in control, and I should set my sights high.
What was your biggest mistake career-wise?
I would say, and I write about this in the book, when I went into the automotive industry, coming more from a technology, I probably rushed into it a bit. I knew that the internet was coming. I knew that consumers would want to shop differently for their automotive products and services. But going into an industry, a legacy industry, can sometimes be tough. And so I someone pulled me aside and they basically said, do you want to be right or do you want to be effective?
What does that mean?
What did that mean? So being right is that.
No, I mean that moment. I want to make sure that we are clear. Because a lot of people want to know about the relationships and somebody pulling you apart. I don't want to talk about the technical stuff. I want to talk about the relationship because depending on your response, if you said somebody pulled you aside, in order for someone to pull you aside, you have to be allowing yourself to be pulled aside.
Yes, that's correct. And that is.
And somebody liked you, cared enough about you, your product, to pull you aside, and you recognize that. Talk to me about that moment, that's why I said don't miss my point. Because there are times, and I hear this all the time, when black women will say that somebody may pull them aside or try to pull them aside, or it's the tone or it's the attitude. They don't want to hear it. And that in and of itself is a mistake. So talk to me about that, that pulled aside moment and what was going through your head even before you heard what that person had to say. And who was that person to you?
Yeah, and so it was someone that I trusted. And I think it works both ways because someone pulled me aside, because I was working on this project, which we had talked about, in terms of, but at the same time, coming into an industry where I did not know the industry, but I built relationships and I said, okay, who will tell me the truth? I don't think I'm doing so well. So I asked them and I said, what should I be doing differently? And I think all along, and this is also proven, I will give you another stat, but it's also proven that women and people from underrepresented minorities receive the least amount of feedback. Mm-hmm. So it is so important that you go find out. And so once I found out, it was really great advice. You really don't know the automotive industry. Why don't you take this position under this person? You keep all your perks and everything, but it's a little bit of an ego, but work here and you're going to do a complete product cycle and you're going to run a product line and that's what you need to do so that you can earn credibility. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's all I have to do. I'm like, I know I can do this. So I said, fine, I'm going to run a car line. And so at that point, I could have done a couple of things. I could have left, or I could take the feedback and then apply the feedback. And so then applying it, so I did that, for a couple of years. And the next thing I was, running all of the brand plans for all of the Dodge car and minivan. So I do believe feedback is a gift, and you have to be willing to listen. And you need to, as you're taking the feedback, though, you do want it from a trusted source.
How do you get a mentor?
A mentor, it has to be authentic and more organic. I mean, I think many companies today, and we have them, where you have mentor programs, and I think they're terrific, by the way. And, I've had a few mentees through those types of formal programs. So there are formal programs that you can participate in, and I think they're terrific. I think, staying close to whether it's your alumni associations, those are really great. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I do think these generational alliances are so important so that you can either reach back, because I think the further you go in your career, you'll see others, potentially could be taking, they shouldn't be going down this road. And so that's one of the reasons why today I have open office hours. And I have open office hours. Everybody, it's 15 minutes. You have to sign up, for 15 minutes. And I'll talk to anybody in the company.
Sounds like undergrad school.
It doesn't matter. It could be, what we call a noogler, someone who's new to the company. And I just love that, when they're new. And you want to be accessible, but sometimes it's very hard to scale yourself. I mean, that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why my co-author and I, Jackie Adams, you know, we wrote this book so we would have a degree of scale in terms of the message, which we wanted to keep, you know, fairly, you know, optimistic, but realistic, and at the same time, simple, but powerful in terms of teaming up. And so that's what we've done.
We are living right now in some really unusual, multi-layered, you know, times. And when, and particularly in the tech world, and this is not new, I would argue, and you would maybe know more specifically, that the tech world has been under a lot of scrutiny as it relates to diversity. Women, people of color, it has not been the domain of that, you know, that group. It's always been, you know, t-shirt wearing, sneaker wearing white guys. But as the world changes with a great deal of difficulty, do you see now opportunities that and the kind of brilliance that some have said did not exist in the black intelligentsia, the black education sector, moving into your world?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we were the first to release our diversity report in 2014, and we're not necessarily proud of the numbers, but we have been very focused on how we can change them, you know, quite frankly. And even an idea that I had, I'm not an engineer, but I was reading, because I always am researching and reading, and I said, 25% of the STEM graduates are from historically black colleges and universities. So then I met with Dr. Frederick, and we thought about this and said, well, what if we had a Howard West? Like, instead of having, you know, there's faculty programs where you get existing employees to go and teach. But we said, what if we actually did the reverse? What if we gave the students more of an immersive experience so that they would understand Silicon Valley and have access and again, have more of a lived experience? And so we did that. It's now grown to 10-plus schools. And that's the type of program, and it was immediately embraced. It was like, oh, how did we, you know, here, like 25%, we absolutely should do that. And I will say, and I know, you know, Dr. Frederick would have the stats, but I do believe, you know, long term, and it's you know, planting those seeds you may never see, but I do believe that Howard will have one of the top computer science programs by the time the investments continue to go in, and I'm sure they are attracting, you know, more students of color to the computer science program. And so that's part of it too, is you need to understand what technology is all about. Yes, there's computer science, there's also business roles. We now have, you know, a woman of color, you know, leading, who's our general counsel, you know, so there's all sorts of roles that are available within technology. And so part of it is getting the word out and letting people know more about technology. And but it is even a risk profile, because some of the companies are smaller, they're startups, they're, you know, Series C, then you Series D, you know, these, it's a different risk profile. And so that's also something that has to change as well in terms of entering some of these new fields.
Outside of the corporate culture, because everyone isn't in the corporate culture, but everyone is in a work culture. And this goes back to what I was asking, you know, earlier. How do you change the mindset and attitudes when, and we're talking about black women now, when their experiences in their workplace with other women of color has been subpar? How do you flip the switch and make it better?
Well, I do think, some companies, have events or programs where they start to create the sisterhood. We're certainly doing that within Google, creating that sisterhood. And I think someone has to start the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're saying. We're saying team up. And we did it. Thinking about the idea, here's what we should have a new narrative for women of color. I said, okay, who could I team up with? Stellar, renowned journalist, first, African-American female CBS White House correspondent. I'm like, perfect. Right. Then we teamed up. Now we have a woman of color publisher, so we teamed up every step of the way and it works. And I think it starts with the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you get two of you, and then if two of you do it, then three of you. And then all of a sudden it looks like, oh, wow, what's going on over there? Oh, you know what? They're giving each other feedback and sharing information, so it's not a mystery. They're basically demystifying certain things, and they're taking stretch assignments. Yeah, that's what teaming up is all about. It's really starting with ourselves and referring ourselves and creating our own flywheel, which would become Sisters as a Service. That's what we should think about. You give before you get.
You know, it's interesting that you speak to that. If I were to discuss you with, my mother now, she would say, well, this is a woman who knows stuff. And that is one of the greatest compliments that she could, give to someone. And just looking at, all of the accolades, Crain's New York Business named you number 46 as the most, powerful women in New York. That is a big deal. So once you realize that you do have power and influence, how do you develop a strategy for wielding that for the benefit of those who come behind you? What's the thought process? What is the plan for that?
So the plan, I focus on leaders, because if I'm at the helm and I have leaders underneath me, I need to make sure that those leaders are the most inclusive leaders. And so when you start to train and open it up and create the psychological safety, and then your team starts to diversify, and then your high-performing team, it's a beautiful sight. And so, but it does start with the managers. And so I've actually spent more time really working with managers, because in many cases, those are the ones that are choosing the stretch assignments or thinking about, recruiting. And so it's the managers that I believe are most important. And it really starts with the managers having that commitment, also the curiosity. They're going to be uncomfortable, so they have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. But I think that's okay if you actually want to be a future leader. I think the future leaders are going to require, before it was just, you have to have IQ, then it was okay. Now you need to bring in EQ, emotional intelligence. But now we have this, women of color are going to be the majority by 2060. And millennials, people of color in the age between 18 to 29 will be in the majority. And those are your Gen Z and your millennials. They will be in the majority by 2027. Okay, so leaders, that the workplace is changing. And so it will be important for leaders to have this capability in terms of the IQ, the EQ, plus the CQ, which is the cultural intelligence. And so while that is happening in terms of the capability track of leaders, we as sisters need to make sure that we're starting to really create our flywheel, because we're making great strides. Great strides. And so, but it's not all perfect, but we can start this movement ourselves.
Which brings me to my next question. When you talk about, you know, cultures, and I think one of the biggest examples of culture clashes, we're seeing it now, and this is the corporate stuff. This is the tech world. We've had conversations on this program with young Black women and young Black men who were trying to get into the field. This is before, you know, the Howard East or Howard West, but long before that, when you had people trying to break through, and the biggest difficulty is it wasn't even so much about race, it was just about, you know, culture, which brings me back, you know, to yourself when you're the first and or only, you know, in the room. How do you, let me just be clear, how do you talk about the Black stuff, you know? Because, you know, I've been there, being the first and only, you know, in television. And, you know, when you're the first or only, and whether it's a joke or it's a comment that may seem insensitive, how many times do you have to raise your hand before you get the eye roll and you talk about the Black stuff, the people that they need to know that you were born with? How do you deal with that? And I think that remains a really big and important issue on October 29th, 2020, in all careers.
Yeah, you know, that's such a great question, and I know how difficult it is, and I know I've been in those rooms and how difficult it is. I actually, there's certain things you can do in the room, and you gain that power and influence over time. But I remember being young in your career, and it's much, much harder.
Oh, yes.
You do all the work, and then you're never brought in the room, you know? And so I always, now that you are leading, you can lead in a different way. So I always want my team to be empowered. I want them to be, if they did the work, I want them in the room. You know, I want them front and center so that they can grow. And so I do think it's certain techniques. I will say one of the techniques that I use is I am a big behind the scenes. You know, so it may not necessarily be in the room, but it's understanding who should be in the room, or going and talking to individuals. Because most people, you know, I learned early on, it's adult education. So mm-hmm. Adults don't like to be told, and kids are fine, you know, you know. But adults don't like to be told sometimes in a large setting. So I just tried to master the one-on-one.
Interesting. What do you want the takeaway to be from this book?
I would say from a quantitative perspective, I absolutely want to change the 47%. And I think that will take both sides, quite frankly, but more importantly, it's, you know, hire us in multiples. We are ready. You know, we have the foundations and the capability and the brilliance. So the talent is there. We're just hidden in plain sight. I would say that's the quantitative piece. I really, really want the Sisters as a Service. I just think there's so much we have that we could share with one another, and have transparency and provide a level of feedback, you know, really support one another. It's nothing, that joyous feeling of when you're supporting someone else and not competing with someone else, it's a special feeling. But imagine if we could just get that cranking. If we were to crank that up, imagine we're already very powerful and influential as Black women. But if we crank that piece up with Sisters as a Service, you know, I do believe we would just be absolutely unstoppable. And that would be, so there's quantitative and there's qualitative.
What are you going to do next?
I'm right smack in this movement. That's where I am.
Right, but based on what your career has been,
I'm not, thinking about that right now. You know, I want people to go to. You can visit leadempowerthrive.com. You can read the foreword by Ken Chenault, who is the former CEO of American Express. We have the preface by Deborah Lee, who is the former chairwoman as well as CEO of BET Entertainment. And we have 8 contributors from the Harvard Business School, and 2 of them actually went to Howard also, undergraduate, so they have the double H. And so we think that the material is there. We hope you'll become subscribers, and we just want you to take this simple concept of teaming up and try it.
Let me have that website again, please.
It's Lead Empower Thrive.
LeadEmpowerThrive.com. I think I'll make sure I share that with my daughter, Howard University class of 2020.
Yes, and then hashtag team up.
Okay, wonderful. I know you're in the middle of this movement, but like I said, in the considering your resume, you said you're not thinking about it. You're not thinking about it until you start thinking about it, so I'm sure you'll be thinking about it soon. Oh, wow, this has been great. So, Benita Stewart, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, your insight, and your thought processes. Keep doing what you're doing, and please stay safe.
All right. You too, Harold. Take care.
That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, October 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.